Welcome to the Together at Peace podcast. Here's the founder, Christine Marzullo, and her co-host, Brittany Jelinek.
Welcome to the Together at Peace podcast, where we have comforting conversations about how we keep the light of our loved ones who have passed away shining brightly in our lives. I'm Christine Marzullo, and
I'm Brittany Jelinek.
And today we're honored to have the beautifully compassionate Kelly Cervantes join us. Kelly is an award-winning writer, speaker, and advocate best known for her blog, Inchstones, where she shared the stress, love, and joy that came with parenting her medically complex daughter, Adelaide. Since Adelaide's passing, just 5 days shy of her fourth birthday in October of 2019, Kelly has continued to write candidly about her arduous and at times contradictory grief journey. Her debut book, Normal Broken, The Grief Companion for When It's Time to Heal But You're Not Sure You Want To, is a USA Today bestseller and is a catalyst for healing and hope for so many. Kelly, we are so excited to talk with you today. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to chat.
So let's first talk about just your beautiful family and just can you share with our audience, you know, about your husband and, you know, your children and how we kind of arrived at this spot today having a conversation.
Yeah. If you had told me 10 years ago what the next 10 years of my life would look like, I think I would have like gone and hid in the closet a la Moira Rose from Schitt's Creek. Like, I'm glad I didn't know. Because it was, and that's not entirely fair because the highs were incredibly high and the lows were wildly low. So my daughter Adelaide was born in 2015 and we already had our son Jackson, who was three at the time. And then my husband is an actor. He had been in several Broadway shows and he was thinking about giving up the musical theater business. And then he got an audition for Hamilton. And then an audition for Hamilton turned into being Hamilton on Broadway. And then our family moving to Chicago, which was, it was just incredible. He played Hamilton for all 4 years that the production was in Chicago and then transferred.
I saw it.
And then they transferred him to New York to Broadway. So our family had been living in New Jersey. We moved to Chicago. We moved back to New Jersey. And he just closed out his run as Hamilton this past January after 2013 performances, which is just insane. It just doesn't happen. I mean, you're lucky if a Broadway show is open for a year anymore. Like, that's a success. So for him to have been able to do it over the course of 8 years with a pandemic thrown in the middle of that is pretty unreal. And it was amazing. And then at the same time that all of this was happening, like literally the same week that Miguel booked Hamilton, we found out that our daughter Adelaide had epilepsy. She'd had a seizure at daycare and that progressed to infantile spasms, which is a particularly devastating form of pediatric epilepsy. And she would never develop on a typical track. So she was non-mobile, non-verbal for the duration of her life. But that does not mean that she did not have ways of communicating with us because good Lord, she would swat her brother across the face when he was squeezing her too hard. And she certainly let us know that she did not like traditional children's music, turn Baby Shark off. She wanted Frank Sinatra. So she still had ways of communicating, letting us know when she was content, when she wasn't. It was a lot. Miguel would be performing and he would text me in the middle of the show to be like, hey, how many seizures were there today? Or he on Saturdays, he would have a matinee and an evening show. And if Adelaide and I were in the hospital, then he would come and visit us in the hospital and take a nap in the reclining chair or futon before heading back to the theater. And it was a lot. It was a balance. We had essentially a surrogate family for my son, Jackson, who adopted him as another one of their children, because we were in the hospital with Adelaide so frequently. And it required a massive upheaval in my life. I had been our family's primary breadwinner. I sold and coordinated events for a Tom Colicchio restaurant in New York City and was supposed to be taking over as the director of sales for another restaurant group and had to turn the job down and give up my career to take care of my family. So it was... It was a lot.
Did you say Inchstones was kind of speaks to your healing through helping? Like you documented your journey with your daughter, even though it was, you know, it was challenging, but all the beautiful stories you share about your moments with Adelaide really touched my heart, and loving Frank Sinatra and Ladybugs and all these little signs are the beautiful way she stays connected to you and almost has this power in your life that's was always unspoken in a way. So when you started Inchstones, how old was Adelaide?
Adelaide would have been 2 when I started Inchstones. So it took me probably 2 years for me to accept that she was going to be disabled, that this was the trajectory, this she was going to lead a non-typical life. And that acceptance is really hard. One of the things that really helped me along was writing the blog and connecting with other families and realizing that even though this wasn't the life that I had dreamed of for her, she was not going to be taking a dance class. I was not going to be cheering her on at soccer games, but that this life could still be beautiful and have joy. And yes, it was harder than what I would wish. And I wish she didn't have to suffer the way that she did. But through writing the blog, processing, connecting with these families, you realize that typical is what you make of it. Typical is what you decide it is. And so was our life, quote unquote, normal? Absolutely not. But it was our normal and it was beautiful.
100%. And I love the concept of Inchstones. Can you share with our audience, what does Inchstones mean to you? And how do you still kind of hold on to that mentality?
Absolutely. So Inchstones is a pretty popular term within the disability community. The idea being that our children can, it takes them significantly longer to reach a milestone. Mm-hmm. So you celebrate every Inchstone along the way to that milestone. So Adelaide was still in physical therapy and occupational therapy. We were still working toward getting her core strong so that she could sit, so that she could hold her head better. And so an Inchstone might be that she held her head for longer today independently than she did the day before, that she took a step in her walker unassisted. And so we weren't working toward the traditional milestone of walking, but we could work toward the Inchstone of assisted taking a step in her walker. And so you celebrate those Inchstones the way that you do a milestone. And I was able to sort of convert that into my day-to-day life, especially once we discovered that Adelaide's condition was neurodegenerative. And so we were no longer fighting for Inchstones for her because her progress was slipping in the other direction and it was going to, and there was nothing we could do to stop it. But I could measure my own Inchstones both in that time and after she passed away to be like, you know what? I got out of bed today. I brushed my teeth today. I made dinner today. And that may seem like something that is mandatory and that you have to do in any given day. But as you both know, when you are deep in grief, that is nothing is given. No daily activity is given. And so I would celebrate that Inchstone of brushing my teeth, of meeting up with a friend, of being able to go grocery shopping again, because that was something that was particularly difficult for me. So all of those pieces, those were my Inchstones, and I would celebrate them, whether that was just, you know, writing about it on my blog and congratulating myself, or having a piece of dark chocolate or a glass of wine or whatever my way of celebrating that was. But just acknowledging those small steps that you have to take that may seem excruciatingly difficult, and allowing ourselves to appreciate those small steps, because it's not all milestones, especially once we get older, right? Like once you've married and you have the kids and you've graduated from whatever schools you're going to, you miss out on those celebrations, but we should still be celebrating all of these achievements, no matter how big or small that we have in our lives.
100%.
I think that's so healing too, because it's almost like you have a mile marker where you're like, okay, you know, if you're running a marathon, you're like, I have 13 left. I have 10 left. I have, you know, and so you're able to see all of these incredible accomplishments that you've made in the healing journey, which may not necessarily have like a great distance, but they have a really big impact internally.
Yeah, absolutely.
The little things are, you know, something we always talk about. And you say it in your book too, the little things are the big things. And that's kind of speaks to Inchstones as well. And I know that before she passed, it was just before her birthday, and you had a little birthday party for her and kind of incorporated some of the things that she loved and I think have carried over to be some of her signs for you and how you continue to connect with her today. Could you share a little bit about that party and what that meant to you and maybe how you continue to celebrate her heavenly birthdays?
Absolutely. So Make-A-Wish had reached out to us, and originally we had wanted to take her to Epilepsy Awareness Day at Disneyland. And we realized as the date of the trip came closer that she was not well enough to make that trip. And so we had to pivot very quickly. And the Make-A-Wish team in Illinois was incredible and really worked with us. And essentially I gave them 48 hours because Adelie was declining so quickly to put together a birthday party for her. And they did. And it was a ladybug garden themed party. And so when I was pregnant with Adelaide, I had a dream that I was pregnant with a ladybug, and which is somewhat bizarre. I woke up from that dream and told my mom that the safari themed nursery that we had been planning was, we were scrapping that, and it was now going to be ladybug themes. And all of her bedrooms from then on during all our various moves always had ladybugs incorporated in them. And so it was ladybug themed. We had her favorite jazz music playing. Princess Belle came and paid her a visit. We couldn't bring Adelaide to Disney, but we brought a little Disney magic to Adelaide. And it was one of the last days that she opened up her eyes and she looks up and she sees Princess Belle standing there. And she was just in absolute awe. Yeah. It was beautiful and it was peaceful and it was pure magic. And to this day, I'll never see a ladybug and not think of her. I love it when other people see ladybugs and they let me know that they've seen one and Adelaide was with them. And it helps me to know that other people are remembering her and keeping her alive in that way. Frank Sinatra music will pop up in our lives in the most bizarre times and places just when I need her most. We lost a bid on a house when we were moving back to New Jersey and I was so upset. And I was out to dinner with my family and I go into the bathroom and they're in the women's bathroom, for whatever reason, there was a picture of Frank Sinatra over the toilet. And I was like, what are the chances? Like, I had just gotten the call and it was like, Adelaide, just like, you know, it's all good, mom. It's fine. And she was right. We got a better house. And so there's all of these different ways. We have a wind chime that hangs outside of our house. I had gotten it as a gift after Adelaide passed away, but in our condo in Chicago, we didn't really have great outdoor space. So I didn't hang it up and I'd forgotten about it. And I brought it out about a year ago. I was like, oh, we have a back patio. Well, I'm going to hang this up now. And since Adelaide passed away, we've adopted a little girl, Anessa. She's 5 now. Mm-hmm. And she was asking me about the wind chime and what it said on it. And I told her that it had Adelaide's name on it and it was in memory of Adelaide. So every time we hear it chime, we can think of Adelaide. And I hung it and I didn't really think much about it. And then I was bringing Anessa home from school and we're walking up our back patio steps and the wind chime is going. And Anessa stops and she looks at the wind chime and she goes, hi, Adelaide. And she starts walking in the house and then she turns around and she looks at me and she goes, mommy, you have to say hi to Adelaide. She's saying hi to us.
Oh my goodness. I was like, wow. That's so beautiful. I mean, and honestly, that speaks to how important it is to share the love and legacy that's so alive in your life because it brings them together. And I think that like kids have this like unique way of connecting
they
with
do. Like they don't overthink it the way an adult does.
Yeah.
It's like, hi, obviously, you know, like an adult, I don't know. I'm going to doubt myself until I don't believe it anymore.
And I don't want to put you on the spot, Brittany, but so we were listening to your book and I, you know, listening to your voice, sharing your story was so powerful for me personally. You can hear it in your voice. You can hear the love and your candidness it's amazing. And I think anyone who listens or reads your book is really connected to you personally and also healing and finding hope. While we were reading and talking and writing the blog, and Brittany, you know, she was writing the blog and she was helping put it all together. And her, I want you to kind of share maybe or share your ladybug story with Kelly.
It was around the time I was writing it, right?
Yeah.
we should have told Kelly this. My son, we were in his room and there were ladybugs all over his bedroom window, like 15 of them.
Oh my gosh.
It was unexplained. They're not anywhere else in my house. They're not by any other window. And did Henry also start saying ladybug
too? Yes. That was like one of his first words.
Yes.
She's like, you're coming to know all these signs. Like, her grandmother passed away before she was born, but she doesn't, you know, she's kind of new to the whole, like, looking for signs and feeling like connected to people's loved ones that have passed away. And she's like, I don't know what to do. I can't make this up. There's literally ladybugs all over her window. I'm like, well, that's because you're writing, you're writing yes. a blog and we're talking about it. And I'm like, that's amazing. It's like normal to me. Cause like we always talk about signs and we're like, oh, hi dad. Like, you know, crazy things will happen, but it doesn't seem crazy to me. It seems like amazing. Like, oh, my dad like showed up in the sun rays and it's just like weird things. But, you shared this story about when you went to the grief retreat too. And I want to talk a little bit about the importance of connecting with, those who are grieving and parents, especially who have lost a child, and you went to a retreat. Can you share a little bit about that retreat and what that meant to you and how you saw your little ladybug while you were there?
Yeah, I was very apprehensive. It was within the first year after Adelaide passed, and someone had messaged me on Instagram and was like, hey, there's this retreat happening. You should look into it. I don't even remember who it was. And I looked into it and there might've been a couple glasses of wine. And I woke up the next morning and I checked my email and it said, we are so excited to see you at our retreat. And I was like, wow, what did last night Kelly do? Because this morning Kelly is not super into this idea. But I figured it would either make great writing material or something incredible would come out of it. And it turned out to be both. It was actually where the title of my book comes from. I had been feeling so broken and like I was this puzzle piece that no longer fit into any aspect of my life anymore. I didn't fit in with my friend group of disability families because I no longer have the disability child. I didn't fit into, we had moved back to New Jersey and I was like, I don't fit in here with the typical families. I didn't even feel like I was still grieving so heavily. I almost didn't feel like I fit into my own immediate family unit. And so I get to this retreat and we're all sitting around a campfire, that first night, or maybe it was the second night. And we had all shared, you know, we've all come to this, we've all lost a child, but various ages, backgrounds, ways that our children have passed. And that night we're dancing and singing to Belle Biv DeVoe and Backstreet Boys. And it is, and I recognize that it's one of the first nights for certainly for me, but I think for a lot of the other women in the circle where we'd felt comfortable and like we could let loose a little without anyone worrying that we were over our grief or over our child. And I still felt broken because I'm always going to feel broken. I'm always going to be grieving Adelaide. But in that moment, my brokenness felt normal. With all of those women, I felt normal broken. And that was so powerful to me, to feel that camaraderie and to know that I will always have these women a text message away when I need them. And that sense of community is so important. It lifted me up when Adelaide was first diagnosed and throughout her life. And now after she's gone, I have never been I never thought I was a group therapy kind of person, but there is something incredibly special about finding a community that just gets it.
Yeah, 100%. I think dancing with alongside other mothers who have lost a child is the most powerful feeling, just because a lot of times people feel like you need to look sad or you need to look like you're grieving. But in a way, if you look like their love is shining from you, it's still continuing to live with them. And I think it's hard to get to that point. One of the things you say is her memories have now settled within me, which I think is part of the way that you're able to let her love and spirit shine out of you. And I think that is so beautiful. And I think you can see how beautiful your love is for her. And it's a powerful example for so many parents that really struggle to smile, to dance, to go out for coffee. And one of the things you talk about in your book that's really powerful, and Brittany and I have had many conversations about this, is the fear of the reaction. You know, the fear of the reaction. Can you talk a little bit about what you say about that in the book?
Yeah. It took a conversation with my son for me to realize I was having a lot of anxiety about just going, leaving my house, being social. I would send my husband out to meet anyone new, and so he could tell them our story and sort of feed him to the wolves, because I couldn't do it. But I didn't understand why I couldn't do it. And it was really confusing to me, because all I wanted to do was to talk about Adelaide. Mm-hmm. I love talking about her. I love sharing stories about her. It's what you're talking about, like that light coming through you. And so why was it so hard for me to go out there and to talk to people and to meet them and to share the beauty of my little girl? And I was sitting down to watch a movie with my son Jackson, and we were looking at various movies, trying to figure out what we were going to watch. And it was like some sort of like Godzilla movie. And I was like, why don't we watch this one? And he was like, no, I can't. It's too scary. I was like, you know, those monsters aren't real. And he's like, yeah, but it's not the monsters that I'm scared of. It's the people's reactions to them. And I had to sit there for a minute, sort of dumbstruck. And I was like, that's exactly what it is. It's not that I'm afraid or that I'm anxious about sharing Adelaide with people. It's that I can't handle how they react. And once I made that discovery that it was actually not my anxiety, it was not my sadness that was causing me to be afraid of socializing, it was all in the other person that I was talking to. And once I could separate that and be like, you know what, that is their baggage there. That is their issues. That is their stuff that they need to work through. That's not mine. Then I felt this relief. And like, I was able to have those conversations. Is it still uncomfortable sometimes when someone breaks down and is crying after I tell them the story? Sure. Absolutely. But I now understand that I can still keep my daughter's memory alive. I can still live in her joy and her light and not let someone else's story, their experience, their perspective impact me. I can kind of just not put up a wall, maybe like a sheer curtain.
Yeah, I think it's interesting to open up the conversation about that, because I think you do speak to the grace you give people. You know, it is kind of a complicated situation on how, what is the right reaction? But I think at the end of the day, you just want people to ask more about what was she like, you know, tell me about her, because I know she's still alive in your life and she's, you know, made a mark on the world and she's continuing to make such an impact by you sharing your story. And, you know, every time I see a ladybug, I think of her and Frank Sinatra. And it's just, it's a really beautiful thing to share the story, because I would have never known about her had you not shared the story, and no one is able to know you without knowing Adelaide. And I think that's a really important takeaway that hopefully can open the conversation. And that's what we're trying to do here at Together at Peace, is make it more of a normal conversation where, you know, I was just thinking about this today. Like, you apply for a job, you know, and you're like, your medical record or whatever, like, are you suffering from any conditions or whatever? And no one ever asks you, like, did you lose a loved one? Because that is such a powerful, impactful, you know, pivotal moment in your life. Like, are you having support? You know, do you need support? So that's an important conversation to have. And I think opening the dialogue about what is a response that feels good to me and helps me will help other people, because people do mean well, but they personalize the response a lot of times. And then you're like, why did I even say anything? Did I even say anything? And then you don't even want to meet new people, because you're like, I don't even want to know them if they don't know about Adelaide. You know,
exactly. Exactly. Yeah. It's a vicious circle. And, you know, what people need to understand, I think, when they are talking to someone who is grieving or who is sharing a loss with them, is that you can't fix this, and right, they don't want you to. That's not your purpose. So they are sharing because they want to share, because they feel compelled to share. And so the best thing to do is just listen and acknowledge and then ask questions. The number one thing I tell people when they're like, what should I do? Ask about them. Ask about their loved one. There is nothing more powerful than to just ask questions.
That reminds me of one of my favorite parts that you wrote about in your book is the concept of in order to heal, we must remember. Mm-hmm. And that really resonated with me, especially just thinking about our work with Together at Peace and the memory miles and the memory meals is all really focused on remembering all the little things about the people that we love and have lost and bringing it into the present day, even though they're no longer physically here with us. Yeah. They are here with us in so many ways. Their legacy lives on in these little things that we do, in the mint chocolate chip ice cream, in the daisies, you know, all of these little ways that they live on. And that's healing. It's not creating more pain. It might be painful, but you know, in order, it's an essential part of healing is to remember those beautiful things in the ways that, you know, like the kintsugi. It's all back together at these beautiful cracks.
It's more beautiful once it's broken and put back together than it was in the first place. I think there's such a misconception around healing, and I certainly believed this was the case, that it meant forgetting or leaving behind or moving on. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't mean that at all. It means moving forward with that love, with those mm-hmm. memories, keeping them with you, keeping all of that alive. And that is how you heal. That is how you find ways to continue to live your life, is with that person still with you. Sure, it's not the way that you wish they were with you, but it is still so special. And that was sort of a light bulb moment in my journey, was when I realized that healing meant remembering.
Yeah. Well, when you think about a broken tapestry, you know, and being put back together, and you talk about the golden glue, and you know, that's kind of Adelaide gluing you back together, but now she's part of every little piece of your heart. When you have a child, it's like they're part of you. They already were in you, then they're out of you, and you're taking care of them, but they're always a part of you. And you're shattered when, you know, when something like this happens. And your normal broken title is so powerful. And, you know, having the Adelaide glue that kind of glued you together, but now she's literally infused in every part of your moment, every moment when they're not here anymore, it's part of your every moment. And I totally, you know, understand how you're feeling that, and sharing that with the world is so powerful.
Yeah, I can't, it's kind of incredible. I've been thinking about this a lot recently, where there is nothing that I do, there is the way, the perspective that I have, the way I see the world, everything is filtered through her. And that's, you know, and sometimes that's painful, but all the time, that's beautiful. The people that come into my life because they find me through her, that joy, it's everything. And yes, the grief is a part of that, but the joy, I mean, that's what we live for, the meeting these people and finding ways to connect. And, you know, of course I wish Adelaide was here. Of course I wish that she didn't have to suffer in the way that she did, but the life that she helped me build, the life that she has left me with, is really remarkable. And I'm just so grateful, because I'm so much happier in this life than I was in the one before her.
Well, we are just so blessed to have you with us today, sharing your story. And, you know, for our audience, I would like, you know, offer some takeaways from today. Remember Inchstone, celebrate the Inchstone, celebrate the little things, infuse your loved one's memory into your life and let it shine brightly. And, you know, buy Kelly's book, however you can, if you can listen incredible. To it, it's honestly, it's the most, one of the most moving books I've ever listened to. Normal Broken, it's in every bookstore, online, Audible. When you see ladybugs, think of Adelaide. You know, send your love to Kelly and her family and help her to honor and remember her daughter. And, you know, when you hear Frank Sinatra, listen to some Sinatra. Sinatra reminds me of my dad too, because we had a singer sing Pennies from Heaven at our last luncheon. Because my sign is a penny from my dad, and we love Frank Sinatra. And we're so grateful for our relationship with you and just being part of the Together at Peace community, we are honored to have you here today, and we hope to see you again soon, Kelly.
Thank you so much. Everything you guys are doing is incredible. Thank you for bringing and shining light on grief.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. For more conversations like these, visit togetheratpeace.org.